News Cavalcade of 1959, produced by United Press International. This is a sound of 1959. Music, but music of a special kind. Music from Red Square, Moscow. The Red Army Band playing the Russian National Anthem, a stand-up signal for that part of the world ruled by communism. Measured tones of the clock in the Kremlin wall. Another sound recorded by a reporter for United Press International standing in Red Square at a time when the United States was trying to penetrate Russian understanding and trying to promote the peace of the world by staging an American fair in Moscow.
This is Bob Hewitt of United Press International. News is a record of events which affect men everywhere. It comes to you in many ways. Many times it comes in answer to the question, what did the man say? How did it sound to you? And here for the cavalcade of year 1959 is the news of the day just gone. Accents unmistakable. Sounds of a moment in history. Voices easily remembered. Like the voice of John Foster Dulles, who left us forever during the year.
We are resolved that our position in and access to West Berlin shall be preserved.
Nikita Khrushchev's Slavic tongue.
То отсюда, наверное, за 10.5 я буду дома.
The governor of Louisiana.
I thought I owed it to you to come look you in the eye and let as many of you see me and see I'm living and I'm not nuts.
President Eisenhower's voice to a welcoming crowd in Pakistan.
I have never received in the world a warmer, more hospitable a greeting than was given to me by the throngs in the crowd.
Recordings from a world of roaring events not soon forgotten. Let's start the record of the year with an event still in the world's headlines. The revolution in Cuba. UPI reporter Charles Schumann. The time, last January. He speaks calmly to New York from a phone booth in Havana.
The situation in Havana at the moment is this. The city is paralyzed by a general strike. All stores are closed. People are unable to buy food. The job of policing the city has been taken over by Fidel Castro's militia. These are young men who had been underground in Havana ever since the revolution was on, and who came out, who emerged yesterday after Batista had abdicated.
A short time later, the bearded Castro, victorious but uneasy, came to the United States and explained his revolution in an English alien to his Spanish tongue.
I know you are worried. First of all, we are communists. And of course, I have said very clear that we are not communists. Very clear.
In February, Secretary Dulles returned to Washington from one of his many trips to Europe in search of Western unity. Already he was ailing with cancer, but his voice was strong, his speech direct.
We have reconfirmed the unity and firmness of our position, the position expressed in the joint communique of the four powers at Paris on December 14th. We do not accept any substitution of East Germans for the Soviet Union in its responsibilities toward Berlin and its obligations to us. We are resolved that our position in and access to West Berlin shall be preserved.
The following day, Dulles entered Walter Reed Army Hospital for an operation. Then to Florida to recuperate. When he returned to the wintry north, newsmen awaited him amid the hustle of Washington's National Airport.
Well, I tell you, we just had a conference as to whether or not we could turn the plane around and go back to Florida.
It's pretty cold up here, isn't it, sir? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling very sexy, sir.
I feel pretty good.
He was met by Vice President Nixon.
I would say that he looks as well as certainly you could expect. Mr. Dulles never complains about how he feels, I can assure you. I find that in asking him a question as to how he feels, it's purely rhetorical, because he'll always say, well, I feel fine.
A short month later, Dulles was dead. He was buried in Arlington National Cemetery, May 27th, with the sounds of spring all around.
I am the first to come back, says the Lord. I am he that liveth and was dead, and the fever of life is over, and our work is done. Then in thy mercy grant us a safe lodging, and a holy rest, and peace at the last, through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.
Now a voice seldom heard by Western ears, the Dalai Lama, a mystic reverence who ruled over Tibet until the Chinese communists took over. In April, the 23-year-old Dalai Lama fled to India, where he told of his people's attempt to throw off the Chinese yoke.
The Chinese have taken by force and ruined tens of thousands of homes belonging to my people. That over 1,000 monasteries have been destroyed by the Chinese, and more are being reduced to ruin even today.
And now close your eyes and listen to this. The words are barely distinguishable, but they draw a picture. Governor Earl Long of Louisiana. He suddenly showed up in the legislature, grabbed a microphone, and yelled.
Is that not on his income tax? I'll resign as governor of Louisiana. Wouldn't you like to see that take place?
A short time later, he was in a state mental institution. Not for long, though. He fired the doctors and came out campaigning again, like this.
I don't have an enemy in this state, I hope, except rascals like Bill Dodd, Ray Hack, and Devil Soups Morrison. I'm proud of them. I'll be back. Keep your eye on the indicator. I thought I owed it to you to come look you in the eye and let as many of you see me and see I'm living and I'm not nuts. If I'm nuts, I've been nuts all my life. Thank you and God bless you.
The voters finished that story, defeated Earl Long soundly in a December election. Now to different voices, unknowns, unimportant, except in the part they played in our widespread problem of juvenile delinquency. First, Chicago, teenaged gang war. A shaken young boy tells the coroner how his friend died in his arms.
And I guess he saw Mike's car go by. Hey, Howard, Mike, stop. I'm cut. Take me home. And then Mike stopped the car, and Bob flopped on top of the car in the back. And he fell for the street. I ran over to him. I knelt down. I grabbed his hand. Had blood all over me from him. And I asked him if he was all right. He just stared in the sky. He didn't see nothing.
Then to New York. The voice of a mother whose son was killed by hoodlums.
You ever walk into an empty place when you think there's a boy up there?
What do you think should be done with these boys?
Give them the chair. Don't you think they should get it? What do you think should be done with them? What do you think? Let them out 6 months? Put them in now, big publicity, big shot. And then out he can boast he killed five boys.
You think the police should be rougher on them?
The police, they should let them beat their brains out.
To Poplarville, Mississippi, where in the darkness between midnight and dawn, on the last Saturday of April 1959, a masked mob broke into the jail and dragged out Negro prisoner Mac Parker, accused of assaulting a white woman. Under skillful questioning of a reporter, a fellow prisoner tells what he saw.
Were they wearing masks?
Yes, sir.
Did they carry guns?
Yes.
Was there a fight?
Yes, sir, they started fighting.
Did Parker put up a pretty good fight?
I don't know, sir. It was dark in here, and we was all on the other side over there, but he ran out afterward over there nearby us, and we stood it running from him, and they began fighting over there.
These cells are connected. Someone of you fellows could have helped him last night. Did anybody try to help?
No, sir, because it was rather dangerous. They had guns on us, too.
They held guns on you?
Yes, sir. In other words, necessarily wasn't holding guns on us, but we afraid if we do anything, they were some old watching us, told us don't move.
What do you think has happened to him?
What do he think was going
What do
happen?
You think has happened to him now?
Well, I don't know, sir. From the shape he was in last night, it looked like it was about the end for him.
And it was the end for Parker. He was lynched. Mississippi later closed its books on the case. But the federal government is now pursuing it. Now to the shattering of the quiz show and the story that led to a re-examination of television programming. Quiz shows were watched by millions. Charles Van Doren became an idol of them, winning fame and fortune on one such program. He finally broke down and went to a congressional committee to bear the whole thing. The show was rigged, he said. He repeats this in a crowded Capitol corridor.
Before each program, the producer would ask me the questions. I usually could answer them. Even when I could answer them, however, he would say that my answers were not entertaining, not interesting enough. And he would tell me then what manner to answer these questions. If I couldn't answer the questions, he would say, go look them up, if there was time. I always did want to look up the answers myself and find out as much about the subject as was possible. And so it went, 14 weeks.
Many sounds made news in 1959. You can't make out the words, but the meaning is clear. It's unfriendly. Anti-communist picketing Anastas Mikoyan, first of the high Russian emissaries who helped pave the way for the eventual exchange of visits between Premier Khrushchev and President Eisenhower. Mikoyan, with the unusual talents of a trained diplomat, ignored the demonstrators until a UPI reporter in Chicago asked about them.
I must say that as I was coming here, I expected the reception to be good, but what I have seen now is that it is even better than I expected.
How about the demonstrations that greeted him in Cleveland?
А что насчет демонстрации в Кливленде? Я
это никакого значения не придаю.
I attach no importance whatsoever.
Скорее смешная комедия, чем демонстрация.
It is more, it looks more like a ridiculous comedy than a demonstration.
Кроме этого, американцы не представляют здесь, да?
And those handfuls do not represent the American people.
The government appealed for courtesy to its guests, reminding the people it would expect similar courtesy from the Russians when Vice President Nixon made his visit to Moscow. But before he opened the American fair in Moscow, Nixon shared first night honors with Deputy Premier Kozlov at the Russian fair in New York. Kozlov introduced the theme of peaceful competition.
May competition in producing means of destruction be replaced by competition in producing material benefits and accumulating spiritual values.
Now, Nixon.
There is no magic formula which will settle the differences between us. No conference at the summit which will dramatically end world tension. The road to peace is a long and a hard one. And if we are to stay on it, both our people and our leaders must display patience and understanding to a maximum degree.
Then Nixon went to Moscow. There, in an unscheduled rough-and-tumble debate before live TV cameras, he tangled with Premier Nikita Khrushchev. This is part of that unusual recording.
There are some instances where you may be ahead of us. For example, in the development of the thrust of your rocket for the investigation of outer space. There may be some instances, for example, color television, where we're ahead of you. But in order for both of us... For both of us to benefit. You see, you never concede anything. Where do you see the picture?
Но мы тоже, знаете, не мух, так сказать, нас зря не бьем. А за 42 года, знаете, как шагнули.
Nixon apparently won a personal triumph in Russia. But the United States gained from a people-to-people contact. Russian-speaking Americans, hired to demonstrate and explain the various exhibits at the fair, found themselves answering questions on history, politics, life in America. Gil Alkier worked at the auto exhibit, but he spent most of his time explaining America instead of American cars. His voice is in Russian. Another American translates.
But please, I am just an ordinary teacher of the Russian language. On these questions, I can just express my own personal opinion, which may not be necessarily the opinion of my government or of our entire population.
Gentlemen
wants to know of which party I am a member. I am a member of the Republican Party. Perhaps this is because my father also was a member of the Republican Party. But in general, I am in agreement with the principles of the Republican Party, but of course not alone. I'm also not in accord with all the principles of the Democratic Party. In our country, you can vote freely as you see fit, regardless of the party to which you belong.
Before returning home, Nixon racked up another first, made a radio television broadcast to the Russian people. Here's how he sounded in a Moscow living room.
Now, some may ask why we don't get rid of the bases, since the Soviet government declares today that it has only peaceful intentions.
Некоторые могут спросить, почему мы не ликвидируем базы, поскольку советское правительство сейчас заявляет, что у него только мирные намерения.
The answer is that whenever the fear and suspicion that caused us and our allies to take measures for collective self-defense are removed, the reason for our maintaining bases will be removed. In other words, the only possible solution of this problem lies in mutual rather than unilateral action leading toward disarmament.
Peace. Mikoyan and Kozlov brought that message to the United States. Nixon went to Moscow to show we were receptive And then Premier Khrushchev himself flew to America. Washington, September 15th.
Господин президент, дамы и господа, позвольте мне в этот момент, когда я впервые...
Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, permit me, on first setting foot on American soil, to thank Mr. Eisenhower for the invitation to visit your country and everyone present for the warm welcome accorded to us, representatives of the Soviet Union. Russians say every good job should be started in the morning. Our flight began in Moscow this morning, and we now have the pleasure of first meeting you on American soil on the morning of the same day. As you see, our countries are not so distant from each other.
At the United Nations, 3 days later, Khrushchev proposed.
The essence of our proposals is that over a period of 4 years, all states should effect complete disarmament and should no longer have any means of waging war.
Khrushchev's welcomes in his tour of the country ranged from hot to cold. Once in Los Angeles, he threatened to go home.
У меня возникают мысли такие, что не задумали ли американцы пригласить Хрущева и вот так сказать его потерять.
The thought sometimes, the unpleasant thought sometimes creeps up on me here as to whether perhaps Khrushchev was not invited here to enable you to sort of rub him in your sauce and to show the might and the strength of the United States, so as to make him sort of, so as to make him shaky at the knees. If that is so, then if I came, if it took me about 12 hours to get here, I guess it'll take no more than about 10 and a half hours to fly back.
But receptions in other cities were friendlier, and by the time he returned to Washington, Khrushchev was in a better mood. Before leaving, he was given the same opportunity he gave Nixon, to broadcast to the American people.
Добрые чувства и внимание, оказанное мне как главе правительства Советского Союза, я отношу к народу моей страны.
Esteemed citizens of the United States, in a few hours our plane will be leaving American soil, and I want to express my thanks once again to the American people, to President Eisenhower, and to the government of the United States for their kind hospitality and the good feelings shown to us. These good feelings and consideration accorded to me as the head of the Soviet government, I attribute to the people of my country.
Goodbye, good luck, friends.
At his first news conference after Khrushchev departed, President Eisenhower was asked,
"Sir, what did you think of Mr. Khrushchev?"
Well, he is he's a dynamic and arresting personality. He's a man that uses every possible debating method available to him. He's capable of great flights of, or you might say, of mannerism and of almost disposition from one of almost negative, difficult attitude to the most easy, affable, genial type of discussion. He's a, I think that American people sense as they went around that they were seeing some man who is an extraordinary personality. There's no question about it.
UPI reporter Jack Fox, who accompanied the Russian premier on his 2-week tour of the United States, summarizes.
Khrushchev fascinated Americans. I think one of the other reporters who accompanied the Russian premier on the trip put his finger on the main source of that fascination. It was that there was always an atmosphere of danger and violence about the man. He left the impression of a very shrewd and a very tough antagonist, but he also left an impression of reasonableness and a feeling that it may be far better that Nikita Khrushchev holds power in the Kremlin instead of some others who might be there.
It is a fact of life that the United States is trying to do business with communist Russia. It's a matter of the world's survival. That was the force dictating all of 1959's political voyages. Salesmen on the road, talking and trying to find a way toward peace. Mikoyan, Kozlov, Nixon, Khrushchev, and finally President Eisenhower. At year's end, the president made a 22,000-mile journey to Europe, Asia, and Africa. Everywhere he repeated and reiterated the word, peace. In a television speech to the nation on the eve of departure, he said,
"We have heard much of the phrase peace and friendship. This phrase, in expressing the aspirations of America, is not complete. We should say instead, peace and friendship in freedom. This, I think, is America's real message to the world."
He repeated that message in the rain in Rome.
"We want to live in peace and friendship, in freedom."
And in the sunshine in Karachi.
"We want to work together for peace."
As 1959 drew to a close, it seemed there was still some hope for man. He was learning. The Eisenhower tour is supposed to lead finally to a visit to Moscow and then to a summit conference in a few months. Yes, progress was made in 1959, not only in the building of rockets, but also in how man can get along with man. This has been the News Cavalcade of 1959, produced by United Press International.
Number 17, Bob Hewitt, Wild Track.